we've done some work, not seaweed, but bromoform-based synthetic compounds. So it basically acts exactly as seaweed. And what we've seen there was a reduction up to 90%, more than 90% reduction in emissions. And we haven't seen any kind of effect in terms of the growth. This is in beef cattle growth or any other metric. So keeping the same level of productivity, who knows, maybe even better, then we see quite substantial reduction in emissions. So for farmers, this means that there is a practical way to make a big climate impact without undermining productivity, and we hope it actually increases productivity. We need to do more work for a longer period of time with more animals to be able to say definitively that there is a productivity gain here as well.
Welcome to the Dairy Health Black Belt Podcast, the latest dairy health research digested for you.
Hello, everybody. Thank you for joining us for this edition of the Dairy Health Black Belt Podcast, sponsored by Wisenetics. I'm Craig McConnell. I am the head of Vet Med Extension and the continuing education here at Washington State University's College of Vet Med. And it is my distinct honor today to welcome Dr. Ermias Cabrab, who is a professor and the Associate Dean of Global Engagement at the University of California, Davis's College of Ag and Environmental Sciences. He's also the director of the UC Davis World Food Center. He's given TED Talks on what seaweed and cow burps have to do with climate change. He's been on NPR, and now we're lucky enough to have Dr. Cabrab on the Dairy Health Black Belt Podcast. So welcome, Dr. Cabrab. It's such an honor to have you here today. And first of all, tell me if I'm saying your last name correctly.
Yes. Well, thank you very much for having me. Yes, that's perfect.
It's close enough. All right, good. So today we're going to touch on methane inhibitors and additives. And so let's just jump right into the basics. First question I have is, why is methane from cattle such an important issue when we talk about climate change?
Yeah, that's a very good question. Methane is really quite a powerful greenhouse gas. And one thing unique about methane is that it doesn't stay in the atmosphere as long as other greenhouse gases like carbon dioxide, for example. But while it's up there, it traps a lot more heat during its lifetime. So about 30 to 40% of global methane emissions, as anthropogenic global methane emissions, are attributed to livestock and mainly ruminants. Because methane breaks down in about 10 to 12 years, if you can reduce emissions now, what it means that we can see the benefits of the for the climate within a single generation. So it's the benefits are in the near term. So that's why it's such a critical target, and addressing methane really buys us valuable time while we work on the long-term carbon solutions.
Wisenetics turns podcast airtime into brand authority. We don't sell ads, we elevate voices. If you're ready to boost your authority in the industry, access wisenetics.com and speak with a brand authority specialist. Let's transform expertise into influence, starting now.
Yeah, perfect. Okay, so given that then, what are some methane inhibitors and feed additives, and how do they work inside the cow's stomach?
Yeah, so cows produce methane as part of their natural digestion process. That's one of the reasons they're able to take in high-fiber diets and grasses and straw and byproducts and all that people cannot consume. Ruminants can take that and they can, with the help of microbes, they can break it down into valuable energy for themselves. But the microbes in the rumen, they also work with others, because some of the fermentation processes is hydrogen, and that hydrogen need to be, they need to get rid of the hydrogen. And the way they do that is they work with other microbes, particularly methanogens, and that way the hydrogen is being used by the microbes to grow. And then there's a byproduct from those methanogens, which is methane. So methane inhibitors or other feed additives, then they target those microbes. Essentially, they block the steps where methane would normally be produced if they're inhibitors. So some compounds work by inhibiting specific enzymes that methanogens need in order to form methane. And what's exciting is that you don't really have to give them in high doses. You can give them very small doses, which are not harmful to animals, and they don't affect the nutritional quality of the diet, of the milk and meat. So they allow us to cut greenhouse gas without sacrificing animal health or productivity. So, and feed additives, other feed additives, they also work by changing the rumen environment so that there's not enough hydrogen, or they compete with the hydrogen so that there's less hydrogen available, which means that there's less methane coming from that as well. So you can see sort of two ways working. One inhibitor directly affecting the methanogens, and the other way, other additives that would modify the rumen environment so that there is less methane coming from the rumen.
So I'm no expert in this field at all, but I've been lucky enough to be on a graduate committee with a student who is actually researching some seaweed additives. And so from what I understand, seaweed and 3-NOP are often highlighted. There's probably others that, as far as the additive space and inhibitor space, but what makes these different from other feed-based approaches?
So seaweed and 3-NOP, they're both methane inhibitors. Seaweed, particularly Asparagopsis, it contains a natural compound called bromophore, which is extremely effective at shutting down methane from methane formation in the rumen. Even at really low doses, very low levels, it can achieve quite large reductions. And we've done this work in Davis and also throughout the world. And what we've seen is that small amounts would reduce methane emissions quite substantially when they are given in a way that the animals can consume. So bromoform is a volatile compound. So but in seaweed, it's kind of integrated within the cells so that it's available to the animals. So once they consume it, it starts to break down. It lives in the rumen very short amount of time. So it breaks down very quickly, it's released, and then the metabolites of the bromoform stay maybe a couple of days there. But they usually very quickly is metabolized, and then the impact is that it reduces methane emissions. Similarly, 3-NOP also, it's a synthetic compound that targets the same methane-forming pathway and very consistent results across many, many studies. It's probably the most studied additive out there. It's probably 70, 80 papers that describe the reduction potential of 3-NOP. So compared with other approaches like, you know, adding oils and fats and tannins, those two at the moment stand out because they are more potent and reliable at reducing emissions without having a major trade-off for animal performance. So each has challenges, of course, you know, scaling seaweed production and ensuring affordability for farmers, regulatory approval, and supply chains for 3-NOP might be a bit of a challenge right now, but their potential is really unmatched right now. And we've seen many, many studies that would confirm the potential for both of those feed additives.
Okay. So if we get into the specifics a bit, what have your research or other folks' research shown in terms of the actual reduction of methane? And then ultimately, what does that mean for farmers in practice?
Yeah, so we started working on this, particularly for seaweed in 2018. And the first work we've done in dairy, that was, we saw about 60% reduction in emissions, but we were using sort of a different type of seaweed, Asparagopsis armata, which is similar to the other one, but more effective is taxiformis, so Asparagopsis taxiformis. And when we switched to a taxiformis and we did it in beef cattle, we saw a reduction of up to 80%. And then we looked at it in a different formulation. So we're using powder. And when we change powder into pellets so that we want to use it for grazing situations, and we saw about, on average, about 40% reduction. This is, you know, in a pasture setting up in Montana. And what we saw was that if the animal actually are consuming it, then the reduction is quite substantial. So some animals are okay. They were happy to consume it. And some animals were not too sure. So that's why, on average, we have about 40%. And so some of things have changed a little bit. And now the there are Asparagopsis that you can use in oil format. So in oil, it makes it a lot easier You can combine it fairly easily, and the animals don't have to taste it at all. They don't know it's there. We've done some work, not seaweed, but bromoform-based synthetic compounds. So it basically acts exactly as seaweed. And what we've seen there was a reduction up to 90%, more than 90% reduction in emissions, and we haven't seen any kind of effect in terms of the growth. This is in beef cattle growth or any other metric. So keeping the same level of productivity, who knows, maybe even better. Then we see quite substantial reduction in emissions. So for farmers, this means that there's a practical way to make a big climate impact without undermining productivity, and we hope it actually increases productivity. We need to do more work for a longer period of time with more animals to be able to say definitively that there is a productivity gain here as well. So we hope that it will actually become an economic opportunity, and if carbon markets or incentives are structured so that farmers benefit from their contribution, then to climate mitigation, that becomes even more attractive.
So I think you've kind of already touched on this question I was going to ask, which is looking ahead, how do you see these methane inhibitors and other innovations shaping the future of sustainable livestock production? But as an addition to that, I'm just curious, if we kind of take a step back, this innovation in and of itself, how did this even come about? Like, how did people decide to focus on seaweed, bromoform, 3-NOP as an innovation in and of itself that, you know, might be, I guess, indicator of how the next innovation comes about?
Maybe I'll go with the history first and then talk about sort of the future. So with the seaweed, it kind of started from farmers observing cattle in Canada, in eastern Canada, when they were consuming seaweed, they seemed to do well. So it was really about the health of the animals. But the researcher who was there, Rob Kinley, then went to Australia. He changed jobs to Australia and then started looking into the seaweed that were available in the coast of Australia. And through that, they were able to identify one species, Aspergillus taxiformis, to be very, very effective for methane mitigation. And this was done in vitro. And then when we saw the results, we contacted them and we asked for samples. They sent us samples, and we did the same thing in vitro also here at UC Davis. And we were able to replicate the results, and we got even more interested to do it in vivo. And then they sent us a larger amount of material. And so we were able to conduct a couple of experiments here that showed quite a big reduction. And then for 3-NOP, it was a chemist in DSM in Germany, Switzerland, where they were really looking into, you know, what are the enzymes that are responsible for methanogenesis, and then how do we try to inhibit those enzymes. And that's how the work started probably 10, 15 years ago. We're trying different types of additives to see if there is an inhibitor effect. And then I think finally by 2014, 15, they were able to identify those molecules that were able to do that. So that's how it kind of started. And then a lot of experiments that were done over the last 5 to 10 years, and a body of science accumulated to show that those are really a consistent reduction. So in the future, I mean, I see methane inhibitors as part of the larger toolbox. You know, there's no single solution that will solve everything. But when combined with genetics, you know, identifying animals that have inherently low methane emissions, using better manure management, precision feeding, making sure that you're feeding exactly what the animals needed, all of that, you know, can make livestock systems a lot more sustainable. So in the near future, I think additives like 3-NOP, which is now approved in 60 countries, maybe more, including the US, Canada, and the European Union, others, would be very important. I think seaweed probably will be approved as well. It's already been used in Australia. There's no need for approval there. So this has been commercially available in Australia. Then I think it will be available at scale in the near future as well. And in the long term, you know, we may see even more innovative approaches like vaccines. You know, the vaccines have shown about 20% reduction. We are working with gene editing. We're using CRISPR to edit the genes of microbes, and that might get us closer to 100% reduction. So, well, all of these things are coming in the next 5 to 10 years. We'll have those innovations coming out. So the bottom line is that, you know, we don't have to choose between producing food and protecting the planet. We can do both if we use science wisely.
That's awesome. One last question, given that this is the Dairy Health Podcast and given what you just said about the Canadian farmers that sort of explored this early on, I am curious as far as how the seaweed additive, the additional possibilities for other, you know, inhibitors across the board can impact or sustain health as well in the dairy cow or beef cattle for that matter.
Yeah, so I mean, there is some evidence, not very strong evidence, but there's some evidence that actually seaweed will help with the immunity of animals. So we really need to investigate that that aspect and how it plays a role in improving the health status of animals as well. So we really have to look into the health and reproduction, and you know, we don't want to have any unintended consequences when we are using feed additives. But maybe in combination with others, I think there's opportunity to improve animal health as well.
That's really fascinating. Awesome. Hey, thanks so much for taking the time to do this. I know you're a busy person and you're an expert in this field and you've got other people calling, I'm sure. So I really do appreciate you taking the time to speak to us.
It's my pleasure. It's my favorite subject. So.
Excellent. All right. With that, we'll wrap it up then. Thank you.
All right. Thank you.